All right. It's a lovely morning here in Seattle. I see a helicopter up in the sky. You might be able to hear that in the background. This is David. I'm out for a walk, getting ready to do three things here. There goes a really nice Mustang car, one of those sharp, newer versions of those. Charles Douglas will join me in a second here on the call. Feeling good. The work we're doing, hopeful about the possibilities ahead of us, determined. Also, always appreciate lots of humor. Been laughing about some different things at home with my wife and the boys. Just cracking up with some of the very funny videos and tweets that circulate, bringing some good humor, laughs in these times. And you got to laugh. I remember in the work that I've been fortunate to do with some civil rights, spending time with civil rights foot soldiers who were very influential in the 1960s, 50s and 60s. In the movement, Bob Zellner, one of those members that we spent time with, used to tell us that Julian Bond, that one of their leaders, had a phrase that you gotta laugh while you're waging revolution. And I'm certainly not waging revolution. I'm just trying maybe at some level we are. The revolution is to bring about voting justice for everybody, not just the privileged and the powerful, but to bring about common power as well as common purpose. But you gotta laugh. You have to allow your soul to do that because it fills you up. And if Charles Douglas ever joins us here, we'll get going. I don't think Charles is going to ever get on the phone here. I'm not sure. Oh, hey, are you there?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
you know, I think, is it a revolution? Is what we're doing revolutionary?
Well, I when I said that, of course, I'm like, no, I'm not a revolutionary. That's not my identity. That's not who I am. But then I caught myself thinking about it, like, hey, maybe there's various types of revolutions, and mine is the one that I'm engaged in is more of one of seeking to perfect the union, right? The more perfect union.
Well, okay, so that's a super broad definition, but
it is. Yeah.
Because revolutions are like, it doesn't mean they're the first time it's ever happened.
Okay, right?
So
all right.
We could be doing what someone else is doing. But there's also the way that we're doing it. You know?
Oh,
I think
okay.
There are all other right. organizations that are doing something similar to what we're doing. But are they doing it with an eye towards young, diverse leaders, with leadership development? Really, really real leadership development for those folks with a community first, team first kind of ethos, with a partner org led on the ground focus. You know, these are things that I think other people give lip service to, or they would agree are nice things. But these are things that make up who we are, and I think that us doing something similar at the result stage of like the more perfect democracy, I think that's fine. I think the way that we're doing it is probably revolutionary.
Huh? Yeah, I think you're right that a stronger case could be made for us fitting a definition of that of that term, that concept, by methodology rather than by focus of work, right? Yeah,
right.
So that makes sense to me. That, and I do. I so many really great organizations that we are connected with, or that we are that cross my path, my email inbox, are doing work, you know, for mail-in balloting or for voter registration. Absolutely. But the whole package, the next generation leaders, the community and teams, the partner org model, all of that is, I just never see that package together, right?
Well, you never see it together, you never see it as like non-negotiables. You know, you see it, especially uh-huh. during times like this, where, you know, we are in dire straits as a country, the economy is tipping over. And people start to get rid of some of these principles. They go, well, you know, we care about our employees, but we can also let them go without any help at all because it's really about the executive leaders. Or, we really like young people, but we're going to let the older folks take over right now and kick all the young folks to the curb during this time. And we don't need to develop them right now because it's an emergency. You know, there's a plenty of that going on right now.
But not sure, and we've set up not with us. No, if anything, we're leaning harder into that to the least
exactly.
We are. But also legally in our capitalistic society that we have bought into and that we support, these corporate or entities have these stockholder legal requirements to prioritize the institution over the humans, right? And
yes.
So, like, they have to, they legally have to lay people off and or fire them or let them go or change the mission to fit the times. And that leads actually into my first thing. So I'm going to go with the first thing.
Let's do it.
For our three things. So the first one actually is, I was reading the newspaper this morning. I don't know if you know what that is. You might want to look up that word. Okay, but I was reading the newspaper this morning.
Yeah, I found out what the newspaper was after we wrote an op-ed.
Okay.
I bought some physical copies of it. It's pretty interesting. It's like a website,
sure.
But it's on paper.
Yeah, did you know that we have one in Seattle?
I know.
We used to have two, man.
I know. I wasn't gonna say that. Now you got me sad.
Okay, plus a basketball team. Oh no! Okay. Oh, a men's basketball team, because we clearly still have a phenomenal female basketball team.
Oh, very good. Very good.
So I was reading pulled in the paper today and looked at the headline, and the top of this paper today, it's about jobless claims and unemployment, all right, in the state.
Sure.
And how devastatingly high it is and how it's going to get even higher because there's going to be a second wave of unemployment requests because of companies and organizations that tried to keep people on the payroll, hoping for a very short window of paying them while there was no revenues. But now we're going to have to face the reality, okay? So there's going to be a second wave. And my first thing then that I'm fired up about or just appreciative of is that in the Common Purpose organization and in this work, we have people that have made commitments to us to help support our organization financially through you know, our four-year kind of startup window. And
yeah,
those commitments, my God, they mean everything. They mean everything for us being able to do what we are doing. To hire people, to have people leave jobs, to have you leave a Starbucks, for me to come on leave and to depart UW, all of that. We could not do that without those commitments. And looking around us right now, we are focused on our work, and we are able to stay focused on the work in the midst of this massive crisis because of that support. So this is to everybody who supports us in any way that they do. Financially, it is fundamentally, foundationally central to our ability to do this work and to get incredible young talented leadership to come on board.
Yeah, that's a really good point right now, because we everyone else is looking inward. Not everybody, but a lot of folks, it's tough. They're looking inward and they're really thinking about, do I even have an organization anymore? Will I have a job? That kind of thing. And they should, you know, those folks, they really should. And we are, in many ways, blessed to be able to focus on the work wholly. And that's something that, because of the uniqueness of our organization, some of the younger folks who were coming on board were kind of like, hey, this is so cool. I like this organization and this job. Are you sure that the money is going to be there? You know, there was like some of that legitimate, and that was before coronavirus. It was before. And so it shows how unique we are and how there's no comparison anywhere else in the country or anywhere else in Seattle for them to be able to say, yeah, this is going to be a good thing. It's going to last. Our foundational donors did that for us. They provided a firm foundation for us to stand on. And that was, you know, that was before coronavirus. So again, thank you for letting us focus on the work.
Totally. And in our side of the deal is that we will focus on the work and we will do the work and we are, and there's no retreat, none.
No, it's actually exciting. We're still, you know, more and more folks are looking at us. As help has started to retreat, actually, in certain places, we are one of the few organizations that's still reaching out to other orgs and saying, hey, we've got, you know, hundreds of volunteers that now want to do phone calling and letter writing. People are pretty amazed, and they're actually, you know, we're a priority to them.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. Okay, so second thing?
Yep.
So, I got the second thing.
Yep.
I was on a call yesterday. Mm. It was a Zoom call with the Wisconsin Democrats. And I joined the call with a bunch of Team Wisconsin folks from CP. Shout out to Carrie, who's doing a lot of heavy lifting on the interaction with our partners, Wisdoms. Linda's doing some of that too. They're just Mary and Steve and Frida and Jenny, Kate. You know, they're all doing such a good job being this leadership team for the Wisconsin team with CP and interacting with this local partner and keeping us up, like keeping up that relationship strong. We were invited to this call. It wasn't everybody. It wasn't a bunch of other groups in Seattle that were invited to this call. We were invited to this call, and it was addressed by Ben Wickler, that leads the Dems in Wisconsin. And it was kind of a recap after the election. And man, it was some of the most weighty and inspirational stuff that I've heard doing this work. You had testimonials from people that said that they did their best to help people who needed to have their absentee ballots witnessed. There were a bunch of elderly folks that could not leave home, and they actually like went to their houses. And I'd heard stories in the news like you about these folks, but to hear somebody say, I put on like my rain jacket and I put on my gloves and I like taped the wrists and I went out there, I put on a mask that I could see what I could find, and I went to these places and I wrote, you know, I signed these things, I witnessed for these folks, and I turned in these ballots. And one person did like five, another person did like 10, but like they, again, like they're risking their lives so that these people can vote. It was some heavy stuff. It was some really heavy stuff. Another person She said that she'd been contacted by somebody who was in New York, whose mother said that she wasn't going to vote because it was too dangerous. And then she saw what the Republicans were doing and what Trump was talking about, and then she had a change of heart, and then they had to figure out a way to get her ballot from her. It was a harrowing set of testimonials. And then Ben Wickler kind of pulled it all together. And, you know, Ben Wickler, I think, is my age, man. He's like 30s, 40s. And he's this white dude that, I would think that he'd be working at like Google or something like that, right? Like, fits this like archetype, the stereotype in my mind. And I've never seen people like him be inspirational. Like, I've never looked to them for inspiration. I've never thought that they could be. But he showed so much empathy. He showed so much care for his people and his state. So much respect for the African-American folks that in Milwaukee that braved some of the worst, the hardest hit communities when it comes to COVID-19 to go and vote. It was just a really deep call, and they weren't sad. They were angry. They were fired up and ready to frickin' go to fight for this vote, for their right to vote. They've got a special election in May, and they are ready to go for the fall, and they are just so in this fight. It was crazy. It was like being on the front lines in the trenches, talking to the troops that were seeing the worst of it. And it was just, it was a really valuable experience to take and like put in my pocket and carry with me for inspiration.
Did he give any insight in terms of where, well, let me say it this way. What do you think is that wellspring of determination and leadership that they have? Like, where's it coming from? Because they could be so just pissed off and done.
Well, you know, so I remember telling my volunteers, my team, when I led them in 2018, after the first couple trips, when we led them in the fall for the midterms, I remember telling them that Wisconsin is like, it's like America fast forward. It is what happens after we realize that we want to be polarized and then we become entrenched, and there's Republican leadership. They had Republican leadership far before we did. And a lot of the ideas that the Koch brothers rolled out around the country are put in place through Trump. A lot of the people that Trump appointed, they actually like played in Wisconsin first. They tested some of their ideas in Wisconsin first. And it is what you see in Wisconsin are just some battle-hardened folks on the left that have had their union stripped away, that have seen wealth inequality rise. They've seen their education system blasted, resources sucked out of that and given to businesses. And they are fighting because there's nothing else to do. There's no other thing to do than to fight. And for the younger folks that are working on these campaigns, I think they see, again, they see Wisconsin as this front line. And they see, like you did, actually, that there's a chance for it to still tip our way, and they want to be there. And so that, you know, being at the center of it, being on the front lines, being around folks that, if they're still active as Dems, they have found a way to do it and to stay strong. I think that gets people fired up, and that gets the next generation fired up a lot.
Yeah, I really feel that Wisconsin and Michigan and Florida are three states where you can make a case that they're going more red politically, but you can also make a case that there are structural things that are going, that could move it more towards the blue column, and that the battle is pitched. Like it is day two of Gettysburg out of 3 days.
Sure.
All right. And you don't know who's going to win. You don't know. And we have loved, and we will continue to love, working in states where the trend line is very clear towards blue. That's great. We get the wind at our backs because of the work that people have done there already, right? But those states, Wisconsin is one of them, where the trend line is not, there is no trend line. And, or if it is, it's slightly against us. And so we need to be as invested there, and we are. I mean, there's no state out there, that and those two, actually, Wisconsin and Florida are probably the states that we have traveled the most to and invested the most in over our 2 years.
That's true. And we're going to get mixed results out of that. And it's totally worth it. It's completely, totally worth it. If they're willing to fight for it, so are we.
Sure. Yeah, oh, for sure. All right, number three. So we have an advocacy initiative to pursue more robust balloting, voting practices for the fall, for autumn, ideally long-term, but certainly for this autumn. And at the heart of these are increasing the possibility of states allowing mail-in ballots. And for most states in America, a mail-in ballot is only procured one way, by first of all requesting to vote absentee. In Washington and four other states, mail-in ballots are given to all registered voters. But in the other 45 states in this country, the only way you vote by mail is by voting absentee. And the limitations on voting absentee in some states are fairly lax. It's no big deal. You can just request an absentee ballot anytime. You can make it permanent. That's what they have in Arizona. And you just get it every year. You don't have to keep requesting it annually. But a number of states, about 40% of them, have this very truncated, very bracketed, excuse-required absentee process. And you have to have a certain number of excuses. I'm sorry, you have to have an excuse that is part of a certain limited number. Like in Texas, there's only a couple things that you can do it for. Now, I'm going to stop walking because I want to get this, make sure I get this accurate. In most states that are red states in our country, one of the reasons for the absentee ballots that's been allowed legally is if you're 65 years or older. That's just a blanket reason, okay? And the reason that was put into place is because the Republicans in power in those states wanted to allow those voters to be able to vote absentee easily, right?
They skew.
Right, they skew towards them.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So what we have now is we have a president who has dug in his heels very strongly against allowing absentee balloting and mail-in balloting because he fears that it's going to ramp up turnout among populations that are not just the 65 and older. That'll be other populations as well. And so he doesn't want that. He just only wants the absentee ballots to be going to those folks, the 65 and older. So that's the battle we're in. And so we've created a advocacy initiative for Common Purpose where we identified 27 states that we are trying to push, nudge, encourage to adopt more open absentee balloting provisions for this fall. And hopefully once it happens this fall, they'll be open to it permanently. Those 27 states are selected strategically. They either have very limited excuses that they allow, or they have open absentee balloting, but it's not widespread. And we want to help them to encourage that by perhaps mailing them up to everybody instead of asking people to request them. One of our states, well, let me just say, so we have hundreds of volunteers that are making calls, emailing, and tweeting towards four key officials in 27 states. And some of our volunteers rightfully, you know, say. Oh, did you? Good.
Yeah.
Some folks say, like, you know, I'm not in the state. I'm in Washington. Why does it matter? Why should I contact somebody in Missouri or in Florida? Like, are those officials going to pay attention to me? And our position, the view is, based in a lot of other organizational approaches for other folks who we kind of build our work on, that it is a volume. It's about volume. The more contacts, the better, even if you're out of state. Just shows those political figures that there is a certain body of intense, passionate people who are out here and are mobilized. And if you want to avoid their pain that they will inflict upon you politically, then you should do the right thing. So
yeah, it's kind of like a march. It's kind of like a march, right? It's like one person walking in the street doesn't matter, but when you add your number to the other people that are doing it, that's when you start to worry the politicians. When they see a bunch of people out there, and they're not asking how'd you get here, or who are you with, or whatever. They're just seeing this pressure, this visual pressure, and the media is picking it up and stuff. And you're like, I got to do something about that. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. That's a hell of a metaphor, Charles. That is really good. And I dig metaphors, you know that, but I have not heard or thought of that one before. You're absolutely right. You could say the same thing about a march. What good is a march going to do? What good is it going to do? But the reality is that you have a visible presence, and you are showing that we're here and we're going to do this. And also the people who march, they are affected positively by doing the march, right? So
exactly, yeah.
So we have 27 states, and we had our first major success yesterday in New Hampshire, which is one of our states of focus for the advocacy initiative. The Republican governor, Chris Sununu, reversed his position on absentee balloting. They have a very limited set of excuses in that state. So this is a tough state to change. And he said, we're going to open our excuse list to include COVID-19. You don't have to have COVID-19. Just the whole circumstance around COVID-19 is enough for if you want an absentee ballot, you can request it and you can have it for the fall. This is in absolute opposition to his own party's president of the United States.
Yeah.
And it's in opposition to his own position over the last couple of years as governor. So this is a shift. And it's one of our states. I woke up this morning and I'm like, yeah, this can happen. We're not going to have success in all 27, but what if we have success in 5 or 6? And what if there also happened to be a battleground state? New Hampshire is a battleground state. Hillary Clinton won it by about 1% in 2016. And
wow.
George Bush won it in 2004 and in 2000. Barack Obama won it in 2008 and 2012. So it is a battleground state. And so these are at the margins. These percentages are where you can make the difference. So I'm really feeling like, okay, great. We got a little momentum here now. We had our first success. And I'm encouraged that a Republican made this move. And I'm also encouraged that in a number of states we're seeing the Secretary of States or election commissioners being less partisan about this than the political officials. And we're pushing on those folks too.
Can we talk, so that's awesome. That is really a big deal. That is, in this moment that we're in, that's as big as us backing someone's campaign and them getting elected or reelected. I think that definitely goes in the win column. And the win page that we're building.
Yeah, we're building it, right. Yeah.
but can we spend a little bit more time on that? So what is it that you think is the thing, what is going on in his head? And I know, you don't like to do this. But let's unpack this a little bit. What is going on in his head, the heads of Republican leaders that are making these shifts, and what's going on in his head that didn't go on in the heads of the folks in Wisconsin?
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, I think one thing that is in play, and this is how we've selected strategically, not just the states, but the people in the states, is he's a governor. Mm-hmm. All right, he's a governor.
Mm-hmm.
And governors are one of the there's still partisan folks in this country that are governors, no question about it. But when you look at offices, governors are about the least partisan high-level offices in our country. because they have to try to serve everybody, and they have to be an executive leader for the state, not just a district, not right. They have to be an executive leader. So you have great Republican governors in Massachusetts and in Maryland, in very blue states, and you have also had these great, you have these Democratic governors in a Kentucky and a Louisiana, which are red states.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is that Sununu, who's a Republican, is in a state that's a real mix politically, and so he can't govern as a staunch Republican and be expected to hold that position. He can't. Okay. That's the first thing. Second thing is, and so in Wisconsin, there was no Republican governor there to lead the way in a potentially being open to absentee balloting. Unlike Ohio, where Mike DeWine, the Republican governor there, did do what Tony Evers did in Ohio. And the Republican legislature in Ohio didn't challenge him because they're like, we're not going to take on our own party's governor. All right?
We're not going to make him look bad. That's a great question.
And in Wisconsin, the gerrymandered Republican legislature said, we are going to take on our Democratic governor in this. We are. Yeah. So that's one dynamic. A second dynamic, I think, is that we are going to have more success on the mail-in ballot advocacy, I think, with state folks, with state-level, statewide leaders, governors, secretary of states, attorney generals, lieutenant governors, then I think we're going to have with either the federal government, with the U.S. senators, because we're pushing on them too. Because again, I think at the state level, there is this greater sense of like, these are our constituents. These aren't just pawns. These aren't just pawns in a game here. They are our constituents. Yeah. And back to why didn't that play out with the Republican legislature in Wisconsin? Because their legislature is so gerrymandered, and for more than a decade, they have been on this brutal journey to turn that state red, okay? And if you see it at the Supreme Court level, you see it at the legislature level. And so I think Wisconsin, back to the point you were making under number two, is at one end of the continuum of where we can go if we're just going to throw out democracy and be nothing but partisan camps. Mm-hmm. So I think we can avoid that.
That was a really good answer, man. That was really good. That's really good. But I tell you, at the same time, it's about the governors. At the same time, it is disheartening to think that like it's all political calculus and it's not just people are dying, so I had to do the right thing.
Well, let me respond to that. I do think that the election official in each state, which is one of the four people in each state that we're focused on, okay? The Secretary of State is that person in most states, but in some states they are a board of elections official. And what we are seeing right now is a number of election officials who are Republicans in states that are far more supportive of ballot fair voting than any more partisan elected official, even the governors. So in this state, Kim Wyman in the state of Washington is a Republican, and she's our Secretary of State. And she joined a call yesterday with the federal Democratic Party leadership to talk about the importance of mail-in balloting, using Washington as an example of that fraud doesn't happen here. It doesn't happen, okay? So she's a Republican, Kim Wyman. In Kentucky, the Board of Elections official is also a Republican, but yesterday he presided over a meeting in Kentucky that was very fair and open-minded, and they're expanding the absentee balloting significantly for the June primary, and he's the one that's kind of leading the way, and he's again a Republican. So I think that it isn't all partisan calculus, but it's not all partisan calculus for people in certain positions.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that right now it's good to be moved by heroes and people that are exceptional, and it's also good to keep in mind that the political realities still rule. They still dictate, you know, the way this country's going, and it's nothing's changed Nothing outside of an election is going to change that.
Right. So. Wait, right. Yep. And, you know, we see that we need to elect folks who are good integrity people. They're not going to make always the perfect choices, but they're going to care and they're going to try.
Yep.
And, you know, those folks, and we need to not throw them under the bus when they have to make a certain decision that may not play the way that we want. Like, you look at Andrew Cuomo. Cuomo in New York is not he's not a huge progressive. He's not.
Sure. Sure.
And in fact, progressives have been pissed at Cuomo for a long time. That's why, sure, Cynthia Nixon ran against him. Yeah. But he's competent, and he's like a center left progressive. And so in this moment, he's doing things that just a center right would never do. They wouldn't do. So he's not the ideal progressive for true progressives, but he's still a mile better than what the alternatives are.
So this has been a little heavier of a three things than normal.
Yeah.
You wanna tell me what you had for breakfast or something?
I will tell you what I'm about to have for breakfast. All right, because I'm about home.
Okay, wait, hold on. It's 9:30. You've been awake for like 2 hours already, at least.
Three at least.
So. You're just now eating your first meal?
I had a really small...
Can you hear me?
Hey, are you there? See, somebody called me on my phone, and it just totally took me out of the... Oh. It was my wife.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was my wife, and she's like, "Where?"
Your wife is like, "Hey, you haven't eaten yet. You need to come home."
I'm standing out in front of my house now, I could ignore the phone call because I'm in the front of the house. Okay.
Okay. I like how you said, you have to clarify for people, I do not normally ignore my wife's phone calls. And Lisa, when you hear this. This is just, I'm here. you got to tell me about this, why you wait 3 hours to eat breakfast.
Okay, let me tell you that, and then I'm going to come back in, because I just want to say hello. Yeah, I'll be right back, everybody. because I go for a long walk, just went for a long walk, right? And
okay.
If I have learned over the many years through trial and error, that if I eat much before I exercise, it's not a good outcome. All right?
Got it.
I need to have a little something though to take off the hangry edge. All right?
Got it.
So I took a little something, but now I'm gonna go in. I'm gonna tell you, man. Just chill out, okay? I'm gonna tell you.
All right. I'm like, it's just so much suspense. Let's go.
So when you were sleeping yesterday, and I was doing the three things call with Kiana Scott, I talked. My third thing that I was fired up about was is now what I'm about to have for breakfast, which is Rice Krispie treats.
Wait, no, are you gonna re? First of all, I listened to that.
Okay.
Second of all, I was awake. Okay, so I was awake, I listened to that. Are you gonna reuse something? For two podcasts in a row.
Because yesterday was about what I'm excited about. Now it's about what I'm going to eat, and it is Rice Krispies treats. Last night I made a pan of them, and I only ate half the pan. So the other half is here this morning.
You're going to eat half a pan of Rice Krispie treats?
Yes.
You know, you gotta do better during this pandemic, sir. I want you to come out of the quarantine able to fit through the door still, okay? So take care of yourself.
Okay, I appreciate that.
A can of Rice Krispies, holy cow. With milk, don't ask, at least?
No, because it's Rice Krispie treats. So,
I know, but it's sweet. So you kill it with the milk? No, you don't. You don't drink. Do you drink milk?
Only with cereal. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Let's not ask questions about my food. So what kind of coffee? Let's end here. Are you having anything fancy today, Mr. coolest man in the world, coffee drinker?
If the people who drink coffee know that the background sounds for me, so people can hear your background sounds as you walk in, and it's beautiful. It's like birds chirping. It's your microphone rubbing against your clothes. For me, it's sounds of me like filling up my tea kettle, warming up some water, getting my, you know, my pour over stuff ready. I just did a pour over, one for me, that's some Kenyan coffee, and one for Larcy that's a decaf Pike Place. Remember Pike Place Market? It's that place that we used to have downtown where people used to go when we had tourists.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And right now, so for me, for breakfast, I'm going to have some Kashi berry fruitful organic whole wheat biscuits.
Okay.
Oh, they have sweet berries in the middle. Your wife would love this, okay? And it's like shredded wheat, but mini size, and it's got fruit in the middle, organic fruit. Okay, best thing ever.
This the deeply rooted, foundational, working class Midwesterner in me. It's like, how can I possibly be working with you? So let me just say, here's the trigger. Here's the trigger words in there. There was pour over.
Okay.
Kenyan coffee.
Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Kashi.
Sure.
I don't know. Berry something like
organic.
Organic, right?
Whole wheat.
Yes, whole wheat. So may this particular episode never go viral beyond the borders of King County. All right.
No, it's the opposite. This is what's going to happen. People are going to realize that beyond this like super awesome organization, behind this super awesome organization that's doing these revolutionary things in revolutionary ways, there's a duo that couldn't be more different from each other. One of them eats healthy whole wheat organic cereal for breakfast, and the other one has half a pan of Rice Krispies.
Have you ever worn a pair of shorts? Have you ever worn a pair of shorts, by the way?
Yeah, you know what? I wear them every day.
Okay, all right.
I'm stuck at home. I wear shorts every single day. It's my quarantine outfit, because the bottom half doesn't have to be anything presentable, because I'm only on like Zoom videos. So you're looking for commonality. We wear shorts, man.
Okay, awesome.
We both wear shorts, and we miss the Sonics.
We do. All right, we need to go because my wife is like waving me in now.
Tell your wife to buy some of the cereal. She would love it.
No, there's no question that being involved with being partnered with you and with Larcy has without a doubt improved my relationship with my wife, because because there's at least a common ground in terms of like I have a point of reference for the food now. All right.
Hey, that's really, I just want to tell you, that's what this whole thing's about, man. When they do the movie, it's not going to be about CP and the organization and the work. It's going to be a human story about you.
Cool. All right, let's get back to work. I'll talk to you in like five minutes. All right, see ya.
All right. Bye.
See ya. Bye.